In 1521, at the Diet of Worms, Martin Luther was asked to recant his writings. Luther responded, "Unless I am convinced from the sacred scriptures that I am in error, I cannot and will not recant. Here I stand. I cannot do otherwise. God help me. Amen." Will you stand with us as we proclaim these Reformation truths in the 21st century? You can take your stand by becoming a monthly or annual contributor to Issues Etc. To find out how you can become an Issues Etc. confessor, apologist, reformer, or patron, check out the donate page of our website, issuesetc.org. Just look for the picture of Martin Luther posting the 95 Theses. Help us proclaim the solas of the Reformation, Scripture, faith, grace, and Christ alone. Here we stand, Issues Etc., and you.
When you make the statement that I'm absolutely, positively not going to have sex and I guarantee it, you don't think you're setting yourself up?
No, I don't.
Okay. All right, good luck to you.
That's Oprah Winfrey during a recent interview with Bristol and Sarah Palin. Incredulous that Bristol, now she's already had a child, but she's decided abstinence is the way she will go until she marries from this point on. That's commendable. Oprah just couldn't believe it. Couldn't wrap her head around the fact that this young lady could or would say with resolve, of course, no one can guarantee, promises are always kept, but with resolve, I will remain abstinent. And of course, Oprah is not the only one. Even to Christians who favor abstinence before marriage, sometimes those claims sound, don't we have to admit it, sound unrealistic. We are very, very influenced by our culture, especially when it comes to sexual ethics and the sexual revolution. I'm Todd Wilkin. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to begin this hour talking with Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse about Bristol Palin, her promise of abstinence, and Oprah Winfrey's reaction. We'll also talk with her a little bit later about objections raised by various feminist groups to a pro-life Super Bowl ad. They don't want it playing during the Super Bowl. We'll see what she thinks about that a little bit later. We'll round off today's program with Pastor Todd Peppercorn, part two of a five-part daily series we're doing with him on the Complaint Psalms, the Psalms of Lament, as they are sometimes called. Psalm 6 will be the subject in about a half hour here on Issues Etc. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. We're coming to you live this Tuesday, January the 26th. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, or Twitter us at @issuesetc. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is founder of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the books Smart Sex and Love and Economics. Jen, welcome back.
Thanks for having me on, Todd.
Why do you think Oprah Winfrey was incredulous, and that's the only verb I can think of or adjective I can think of, incredulous that Bristol Palin would want to be abstinent and promise to be abstinent?
Well, you know, Todd, before I answer that, and I do have an answer. You know I always have an answer. Before I answer that, I would like to tell you a joke. Do you mind if I tell you a joke?
Go right ahead.
All right. This is a joke told to me by a friend of mine named Don Boudreaux. My friend Don Boudreaux, with an X on the end, is a Cajun friend of mine, and this is a Cajun joke that I want to tell you. Seems that old Gaston Guiteau, who's a good old fun-loving Cajun boy, he died, and naturally, being a good old fun-loving Cajun boy, he went to hell. And he gets to hell, and he's whistling, and he's singing, and he's very cheerful and everything. And the devil looks at him and says, "Gaston, what is your problem? You're in hell. Why are you cheerful?" And Gaston says, "Oh, my yeah, it just live a day on the bayou for me out here." So the devil says, "Well, this will never do." And so he cranks up the heat a little bit, you know, adds another 10, 15, 20 degrees and ratchets the humidity up to 95% and goes to check in on Gaston. And Gaston's still happy and chipper and everything. And he says, what is going on? "Oh, my yeah, this reminds me of being out with my grandpappy when we was out fishing for crayfish. I just feel so at home here." So the devil says, well, maybe I'm going about this wrong. So he decides to turn down the heat. He turns it way down. It gets it cold. It gets it freezing. He gets it snowing. It's snowing. It's blowing. It's freezing. And the devil thinks, this will get him. He probably thinks it's cold when it's below 60 degrees. So he's really, I got him this time. But no, he goes back, and Gaston's singing, and he's whistling, and he's making snowballs and throwing them up in the air, and he's just having a good old time. And the devil says, Gaston, what is your problem now? And Gaston says, oh, my, yeah, the Saints done won the Super Bowl.
Oh, my goodness. Maybe Jennifer should be hosting the Tonight Show. That's good.
An appropriate joke to be telling right now, don't you think?
Okay, but you're digging into the pain that I feel having watched the Saints win this last game, and so I laugh, but I laugh while tears flow.
Why? You're not a Saints fan?
I'm glad to see them go to the Super Bowl for the first time in their long and less than illustrious time
in
the NFL. But I'm sad to see them have to do it over the almost dead body of their opponents. So. Who I was rooting for.
I see. Well, you know, and we should probably apologize to your international listeners who are listening online, who may not understand the American sacrament of football. But that is what we're talking about. Just for those of you who are listening from Denmark or whatever, we're talking about Super Bowl that's coming up soon.
Well, now that you've set the stage with what I think is some pretty decent humor there, why do you think Oprah Winfrey could hardly believe that Bristol Palin would pledge, hopefully, abstinence until she marries?
I think that's astonishing, isn't it? Because if Bristol Palin had said, you know, I want to be president of the United States someday, Oprah would have said, "You go, girl." You know, she would have expressed no disbelief or disapproval whatsoever. So here we are. You know, a young person trying to remain abstinent, and the adults are holding them back rather than providing encouragement. And I think the reason, quite honestly, is that many adults of our generation bought into the whole sexual revolution, and it's really incomprehensible to them that somebody could say, no, sex really does belong in marriage. And the problem for us baby boomer types is that that would require us to go back and say that what we did in college was wrong, and we need to repent of what we did in college, you know. And I encounter this all the time in the lecture circuit, Todd, when I'm out talking to people. I have people come up to me all the time and say, oh my gosh, I can totally relate to what you're saying because I did all that crazy stuff too, and now I know it doesn't work. Our churches are full of people like that. But the world out there is full of people who aren't repentant, and Bristol Palin is a poke in the eye to every one of them. Every abstinent teenager is a rebuke to them, and they don't want to deal with it. Now, that's my explanation.
Now, does Oprah have a bit of a point in saying, Bristol, by making this public pledge of abstinence, you're already in the public eye, you're already got the paparazzi following you around when you're not in Alaska. They're going to be watching every person you ever date between now, and they're going to be digging for information, trying to dig up dirt and see whether or not you've broken your pledge.
Well, look, first of all, the paparazzi are going to do that to her whether she makes a pledge or doesn't make a pledge. I mean, I think it's safe to say. But also, by making a public pledge, you are pledging to yourself that I have now raised the stakes of this whole thing. And I think that actually increases the probability of doing the right thing because you put yourself on the line in a way that you're not if you just sort of mentally, quietly say to yourself, well, maybe I'll do it. Or, you know, she's got a lot at stake now because of that. And so I think that on balance helps you to keep your word. I mean, look, that's why we go to church, or one of the sort of natural reasons that we go to church and say, I promise to be faithful to you and renounce all others as part of the marriage ceremony. I mean, every wedding ceremony that takes place, people realize that, you know, you're going to have trouble keeping the vows. There are going to be times when you're not going to keep the vows. But by making it public, you're raising the stakes for cheating or for falling short. And that's part of the point, I think, of saying in public that this is what I plan to do.
How would you respond to someone who says, look, it's just unrealistic, abstinence in today's culture and climate for young people. It's already sexualized before they get to the college years, and then there's so much freedom. and there's so much of this all around, and the standard is so low, perhaps that's a bad thing. Isn't it smarter just to practice safe sex, not be promiscuous, but practice safe sex and not set the bar so high as abstinence?
Well, look, a couple things wrong with that. I mean, first of all, sex has an addictive quality to it. So it's very easy once you get started with sexual activity to end up doing sexual activity you didn't exactly plan on or didn't exactly intend to do. And so we never talk about that, right? The safe sex people never mention that fact, that women tend to get addicted to their sex partners and men tend to get addicted to sex as an activity. And so getting started is... We understand this about smoking. You don't start. That's the best solution is don't start. And the data tell us, you know, if you postpone sexual activity, you're better off if you postpone it, right? It's easier to behave sensibly and so on. And so that part of the analysis, it doesn't really make sense to say, well, I'll be a little bit. It's like being a little bit pregnant almost, you know. So that high bar standard actually is quite sensible, even from a natural point of view, putting aside all of the other parts of what you said. I mean, and I think that what is happening among the young is that many young people are taking a countercultural stand against that whole hookup culture. And that's what I hear Bristol Palin saying. She's saying, I did it and I've been burnt and I'm not going to do it again. And I think that's quite a sensible position for her to be taking, because she's basically saying, I've learned from experience. Well, that's what we want adult people to do, is to say, well, I was wrong and I'm going to do everything I can to do better. You know, that's called growing up and maturing and learning from your mistakes. So I think it's really tragic for adults to be so invested in their own position that they can't even, you know, support somebody who's making a good faith effort like that.
With only 30 seconds, do you think part of the problem is that we ask so much of today's youth, wait for marriage until you, and then you've got to also have a college degree, a well-paid job, health care coverage, and a car, and remain abstinent?
Well, you know what? If you don't get married until you're 30, then abstinence until marriage is a much tougher sell than if you get married when you're 22. You know, I think that's obvious. You know, if that's your point, I think that's quite right. But the thing that allows people to postpone marriage until they're 30 is the idea that it's perfectly okay to have sex with anybody you want to, as long as you're willing to contracept and you're willing to abort in case things go wrong.
All right. Well, let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll take up the subject with Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris. Objections raised by various feminist groups to a pro-life Super Bowl ad. Her thoughts on that after this.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start. The foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Issues, etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely on you for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. Please consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for your support.
Treadmill for the Mind. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
We've got nothing against bumper stickers, just bumper sticker theology. And we'd like to send you an Issues, Etc. bumper sticker. You'll find the Issues, Etc. logo, slogan, and website address. Simply send your request to Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Please include a self-addressed stamped envelope. Good theology doesn't fit on a bumper sticker, but you can tell people where to find good theology, the Issues Etc. bumper or window sticker.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7? Check out our website, issuesetc.org, and go to the Listen On Demand page. Listen at the gym, in your kitchen, in your garden, on your iPod, your computer, or in your car. The technology may be new, but the truth never changes. Issues Etc. On-Demand Audio, available for your convenience at issuesetc.org. 10 hours of new programming each week, issuesetc.org, and click Listen on Demand.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about Oprah Winfrey's conversation with Bristol Palin, wherein Oprah found it difficult to believe that Bristol would pledge abstinence until she marries. We'll go on in just a minute to talk about objections raised by feminist groups to a pro-life Super Bowl ad. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is our guest. Jen, why should we promote a culture of abstinence?
Well, look, to me, it's not so much we're promoting a culture of abstinence as that we're promoting a culture of lifelong married love. And the reason you're abstaining from sex until marriage is because you're looking forward to something good. It's not that you're giving up sex. It's that you're giving up something good, which is sex, for the sake of something better, which is married sex, which is lifelong married love. And we try to understand that marriage is the situation that harmonizes love and sex and childbearing all in one organic integrated package. And what's happening to our culture is that all of those pieces are being broken apart so that you can have sex without being married, and you can have kids without being married, and you can even now have babies without having sex, you know, which is all kind of crazy. But that's where we are. And the reason we should promote that organic view of marriage, sex, and love is that that's what makes us happy. That's the kind of creatures we are. And it's really in harmony with the reality of the human condition to wed those things together, I think.
I would say this much, folks. You know, when Christians rightly give answers, pledges, promises, vows, and things like that, we can answer yes and we can answer no. But when it comes to making promises about our future behavior, abstinence or otherwise, the tradition among Christians is always to say, I will with the help of God. I think that's the spirit of Bristol Palin's statement there. I will with the help of God. I can't make the promise, but I have to depend upon God's faithfulness in this respect to help me keep this promise, whether it be abstinence or anything else.
The outrage is palpable. You know, nobody wants to have the abortion debate with their six-year-old in their living room over the Super Bowl.
That's Erin Mattson, vice president of the National Organization for Women, voicing her objections to a pro-life Super Bowl ad featuring Heisman Trophy candidate Tim Tebow and his mom. Jennifer, feminist groups don't want, I mean, it seems a reasonable request. Let's not inject the abortion debate, especially when the kids are there watching the Super Bowl. How do you respond?
Well, I think that is so disingenuous on the part of the National Organization for Women and these other kinds of groups. I mean, honestly, the kinds of things that are broadcast on the Super Bowl, the advertising is so raunchy and so awful. I mean, if this ad, this is an ad produced by Focus on the Family, if it was a picture of aborted fetuses, okay, they would have a point. But what it is, as I understand it, is that the advertisement is basically a celebration of Tim Tebow's life and his gratitude to his mom for making the right decision and an acknowledgement that it was a difficult situation for her, but that she did the right thing. And, you know, to me, that's an inspirational message. And, you know, kids are okay with being inspired. You know, they don't need to be freaked out. And I think that I think that what's striking about the abortion debate, to bring six-year-olds into it, is kind of crazy, because I was just at the San Francisco Walk for Life that took place just this past weekend on the anniversary of the Roe versus Wade decision, and that place was packed with little kids and families and teenagers and college students and high school kids. And the younger generation is pro-life. And the reason they're pro-life is that they can't understand why somebody would kill an innocent baby. What, you know, the womb should be the safest place for a child. You know, you shouldn't have to be afraid of your own mom. And so kids really understand the pro-life message intuitively, very, very strongly. You have to really work at it to talk them out of that position. And I think that the old line feminist groups understand that, and they realize that they're losing the younger generation, and that's why they object to having this ad.
Why isn't Tim Tebow's mom, I mean, if what the reports are true, she's talking about being glad that she brought her pregnancy to term with Tim. Why isn't she the poster child for feminist groups?
Good question. Good question. When it comes to it, why isn't Sarah Palin a poster child for feminist groups? You know, she's a very strong, independent woman who's managed a career and a family and all of that kind of stuff. And, you know, the reason these women are not poster children for the old-line feminist groups is that the old-line feminist groups really aren't in favor of all women. That really wasn't what they were about, and it's not what they're about. It's still not what they're about. They use the rhetoric of choice, Todd, because they can't defend as good the thing which they are advocating. And what they're advocating is a kind of equality for men and women that requires us to sterilize the sexual act, which means you have to get rid of the baby somehow. You have to either neutralize the impact of the babies or you have to just get rid of the babies. And so that's the only way that women can be sexually active without marriage, without being dependent or interdependent with men. And the only way that women can participate in the labor force in the same way and on the same terms that men do is to neutralize the impact of children. Well, you know, honestly, that's not a very uplifting message. There are a lot of women who just don't like that and don't believe in that and, you know, are walking away from it in droves. And I see this all the time in the college students that we work with in the Ruth Institute. You know, if people go to ruthinstitute.org and go to ruthyouth.org, we talk about these issues all the time. The young people see that this message is really not a life-giving, a life-affirming message. It's a very negative message. It's a very fearful message. And so they're looking for a new feminism. They're looking for a way of being pro-woman that doesn't require you to kill small children. You know, that's just the way young people are put together. They would rather be able to affirm new life and be pro-woman at the same time. And that's, I think, what the new feminism is creating. Pope John Paul talked about the new feminism, and we talk about stuff like that at the Ruth Institute. Young people find that very appealing, I must say. And so for Focus on the Family to have a Heisman Trophy winner on an ad that's shown on Super Bowl, it's a stroke of genius on their part, really. And I think people are going to respond to it very well. I don't think you're going to see, like, a big outcry. It's not going to be like whatever her name was, Janet Jackson, back then a few years ago when she had her wardrobe malfunction. Everybody was appalled by that. I don't think people are going to react to this ad that way. If I understand what the ad is, and CBS has looked at it pretty closely. I mean, you know, CBS is not exactly a right-wing Christian fanatic group or something. You know, I'm sure that they have looked at it, and there's nothing there that is going to be, you know, gross or offensive. I think Focus on the Family is going to do very well with this ad, and I support them for it.
Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse is founder of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the book Smart Sex and Love and Economics. And she is no mean jokester herself, as she proved at the beginning of our conversation. Check out her website tonight, issuesetc.org. You'll find a link to the website of the Ruth Institute. Jennifer, thank you very much for being our guest.
You're very welcome, Todd.